Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you're listening. Welcome back to AI and the Future of Work. This is your host, Dan Turchin, advisor at Insight Finder, the system of intelligence for IT operations, and CEO of PeopleRain, the AI platform for IT and HR employee service. Today's episode is pretty darn special because for the first time since, I kid you not, January of 2020, we're recording live. I recall back in January of last year, recording with my friend Reza Nazaman in Palo Alto, the then CIO of SAP Concur. And I'm really excited to be here in today's guest's home office. Imagine that. Thanks to all of you for listening. As you know, this is a passion project that has become one of the most downloaded podcasts about the future of work. Please, if you enjoy the show, like this episode, share it, comment on it in your favorite app. We really do read all the reviews and they mean so much to us. A few weeks back, we met a sensational entrepreneur from the Czech Republic, a guy named Filip Dusek, whose company Stories was acquired by Workday. And what Stories was doing, as frequent listeners remember, is automating the process of extracting insights from data. Today's guest has taken a different approach by making it easier for mere mortals to analyze data. I've taken his SQL tutorials, and I can say from firsthand experience, they're better than anything out there. Derek Steer co-founded Mode in 2013, when the world of BI or business intelligence was quite different. He was a data analyst at Facebook, then Yammer before the acquisition by Microsoft, before starting Mode. Since then, he and the team have grown the business to over 600 customers, including over half of the Fortune 500 companies, more than 300 employees. Most recently, Mode raised a Series D of $33 million from HIG Growth Partners, and including some amazing previous investors like Foundation Capital. You might recall our great discussion with Ashu Garg from Foundation, as well as Valor Equity Partners. Derek's a deep thinker with a passion for making life better for everyone who's ever been asked to analyze data, or more specifically, probably for anyone who's ever felt intimidated having to write a SQL query. Today, we get a unique insight into the mind of a successful CEO who's disrupting the stodgy BI space, and in the process, really defining this new kind of citizen data analyst persona. Derek, without further ado, it's my pleasure to welcome you live to AI and the Future of Work. Let's get started by having you share a little bit more about your background and how you got into this space.
Wow, Dan, that was quite the intro. Thank you. I'm very excited to dig into this, one of my favorite topics, and also just to host you here in my home. Yeah, for me too, this is a monumentous occasion, or it feels that way after so much time just in this very room by myself. So I'm happy to welcome another human being here, and I'm very excited for this conversation. The notion of surfacing insights using AI. And what I want to talk to you about today is whether that's the right path to do it, or at least whether that's the right path now. When I started Mode, I have to admit, it was much more focused on my own day-to-day experiences. So as you mentioned, I worked at Facebook, I worked at Yammer. I had the opportunity to see up close and personal how some of the best companies were working with data. And that was the real hypothesis behind Mode. It was as simple as, I think everyone's gonna wanna work like Facebook. So let's just make that possible for them. Because it seems criminal that Facebook and Google and LinkedIn and Spotify and Yammer and all these other companies are going to go spend a ton of money reinventing the same thing as an internal tool over and over and over. Especially, you know, thinking about it at the time, any of those companies could go buy some Tableau licenses. You had MicroStrategy. There were lots of other options for ways to work with data internally and then share it with other business stakeholders. So why go and invent this thing? There are a few reasons. I think partially they're tied to infrastructure. So if you think about the needs of Facebook at the time, the data that I was working with there was in some cases so large that there was no way I was ever going to get even a summarized view onto my laptop. It was just, it had to be done in a data warehouse, or it has to be done in Hadoop. It was just so big. And so SQL was kind of the option for how to do that at the time. But what I've also learned since then, really since founding Mode and understanding where we fit in the market, is that there is a need for professional data people, analysts, data scientists, data engineer, whoever it may be, to work directly with data in the most hands-on or the most flexible possible way. And that way is code. Now, there's a real need to move back and forth between code and other things like visual analysis, like you might get from Tableau, or you know, data pipeline work. Like moving back and forth in the stack through your workflow is just part of the job. And having tools like Mode to help facilitate that really does go a long way. And at the very least can be a complement to traditional BI that is mostly about non-technical end users getting simple answers, or it can be a complete replacement. And the way that we're thinking about this is ultimately, and we're going to talk a lot about this, I'm sure, we want to unlock and accelerate human reasoning. That is the first line of Mode's mission statement. What that means to us is allowing people to do the things that they are good at. Human reasoning is different from what machines do. It's different from what AI does. Questions like how do we price and package our product, it requires some lateral thinking. And we're just pretty far from AI being able to competently answer that type of question right now. So we've got to find some other pathways to really accelerate people. When I think of a metric attached to this, I want to drive the amount of time to do analysis down to zero. Right? People should not actually be doing analysis. They should be thinking through problems, interpreting analysis, and then asking the next question rather than spending their time going and doing it. And it might seem weird that my company makes this code-first product that is about the practitioners who do analysis, and I'm saying that we want to do less analysis, or we want to have less time spent doing analysis. But ultimately, I believe that data teams, analysts, data scientists, whatever you want to call these folks, they are built around the idea of decision-making, finding understanding, knowledge, and truth in their businesses, not around the technical. And I want to push that to the forefront. So I have a number of ways that I think about doing that. And I think that, you know, the contrast between the way that Mode has approached it versus the approach of we're going to let AI just scan a data set and try to tell you some insights, it is really different.
So you got to unpack this paradox for me that's making me kind of uncomfortable in my chair here. The idea of driving down the time to insight to zero by using code seems like an oxymoron here in the valley where we're living in, you know, the ultimate of, you know, no code innovation. How do you reconcile the two?
I've got lots of analogies for this. Fundamentally, what happens is, let's say you've got pick a BI tool, it doesn't really matter which one. Even something like ThoughtSpot, which is entirely semantically driven, right? So in ThoughtSpot, you get a Google-like search bar, you type in your question, and then you get something back. Well, in order to facilitate that interaction, the system that you are querying needs to know what you are saying, right? They need to be able to map your language to some query in the database. If what I want is engaged users in my application, ThoughtSpot has to know how to measure an engaged user. And that's not something that a system can easily do in an automated way. AI is not yet powerful enough to be able to say, oh, engaged user, here's exactly how I'd measure that given, you know, this data in this schema. And I don't know what it's going to take for us to get there. This is not my field of expertise, but I know that we're a pretty long way away from that. So what happens when someone goes and queries this system? They can find out something pretty basic about engaged users. You can get how many people were engaged on the platform last week, last month. You can get a trend over time. And then when you see something that feels a little odd, well, then what do? You start asking other questions. And one of two things is going to happen. Either you're able to get to an answer to your other questions with other things that have been predefined. So you've got this predefined engaged users metric. You can work with all the other predefined stuff in the system. But when you are done with the predefined things, what do? You go ask somebody. And I think this is one of these hard truths that a lot of companies will not admit to themselves, is the percent of times that you either abandon the question or go ask somebody else who's on the data team, it's very, very, very high, right? If I'm guessing, it's got to be 80%, maybe more. Because eventually, you know, you're getting to something that is new. That's the point anyway, right? You're doing analysis to learn something new about the business. And oftentimes learning something new requires building a new metric or looking at the data in a different way than what was already specified. So if we operate under the assumption that the data team is going to get pulled into most questions, then the number one thing we can do is speed those people up. And that's really the point behind Mode. That's why we've taken the approach that we have, is we've said, okay, look, market forces are moving us in this direction. We are now in a world where almost any department or small company or big company can build a data stack quickly and easily and cheaply. And so it's ROI positive for companies, even as low as 30 employees, to have your Redshift or Snowflake or whatever it may be, to hire someone to do analysis on top of that. Like, we see this at very small companies now. We're also seeing a real momentum around data education. That's part of why I wrote that SQL tutorial so long ago. It's a passion of mine. I love doing that stuff. There's also a huge need for it. And if you read the LinkedIn job reports, they'll tell you that data science is growing 40% year over year in terms of the number of data scientists out there in the market. When I gave the first VC pitch for Mode, the only data science program at a major university was at Columbia. It was brand new. Now it's everywhere. Every major university has data science degrees. So the market has totally changed, right? We're in some ways like really stepping up to meet the demand for these technical problem solvers. So what are we going to, like, stick them into some back room, have them configure a system that will allow other people to get halfway to answers and then just go back and ask the same question? It results in this really big challenge where, like, the data team's job is now to maintain a tool that other people can use, but also answer all the follow-up questions. And every time you answer a follow-up question, you're faced with this trade-off of, like, should I build it back into the tool? Is this something I want over and over again? And then that takes a long time. Or do I want this answer quickly? In which case, how am I going to get it done? And the answer, the quick answer, I've had people tell me before, like, yeah, every time someone asks me a question, I say I can either build it into this legacy BI tool or I can go write a SQL query in 10 minutes. And so what we see is just people writing a lot of SQL queries. And that's how, I mean, the way that Facebook and LinkedIn and all these other companies built these things internally is that the need just arose naturally. It was the behavior that people were doing. So I think that's what we're trying to do, is take people's existing behavior and remove the friction as much as possible, and really to make it accrue benefit. I think one of my biggest frustrations is that the way people describe this work is they call it ad hoc analysis. And it drives me nuts, not because I think there's anything wrong with ad hoc analysis, but as a term, it sounds devalued. It just doesn't feel like a thing that you invested. It's not a system. But there do exist systems of doing this work. Like, ad hoc analysis is where the value is. That's where you're going to unlock something new about your business that your competitors don't know. And so building and optimizing a system around that type of work can be really valuable if done right. And that is our quest at Mode, is to do that, even in the face of traditional BI, which feels like this holistic system that will solve all your problems.
We recently had a fascinating discussion with Tiernan Ray. For those frequent listeners, you recall Tiernan from ZDNet talked about how whoever has authority to make decisions, and we were talking about it in the context of AI-driven decisions, things like who gets a loan, but whoever has the authority to make those decisions also takes responsibility for the quality of those decisions. And I wonder how you and Mode think about that responsibility being owned by an analyst when there's no AI involved, but where we talk about the quality of the data impacting the downstream use of the decisions made that are guided by the analysis, by the analyst. It goes beyond just the functional output of the analysis. It's actually about the downstream ramifications of decisions that might get made as a result of the analysis. Does Mode think about having an obligation for the quality and the downstream impact of the analysis?
I have so many thoughts on this, Dan, that that it's hard to even pick a direction to go. I remember at one point in Mode's history, we tried to get really specific about who our ideal customers are. And one of the things that came up, and I think this is still true to an extent, is that Mode is very popular among analysts and data scientists who see themselves as having the right answers. Like if you get hired to go do analysis and get to the right answer, you've got to really believe in yourself and kind of by extension, believe in yourself a little more than other folks. We see that a lot. And it's not my favorite thing about the field that sometimes analysts and data scientists can be know-it-alls. And the truth is that if you are a data professional with the skills to do analysis and an understanding of what's in the data, oftentimes you're going to come to these conversations better equipped to talk about data specifically. And it's going to be hard for other people to tell you that you're wrong. And it's a very, I want to say, precarious place to be. You hold a lot of power. And sometimes I hear things from analysts and data scientists like, well, people don't know how to interpret this thing. I'm afraid to give people self-serve kinds of tools because I'm afraid that they won't interpret it. Like, I just don't think they know how to use it. And again, kind of the corollary to that is, I also don't know how to teach them effectively. Or I don't believe that I can teach them. And so there are a lot of problems with this in general, of like who does get to be the gatekeeper and who's the check on that gatekeeper. Now, I think the way that we handle it at Mode is through transparency. Right? One of the biggest problems in the analytical world is that for advanced analysis, you might have to go through four or five different tools. You know, you have one tool to get data out of a database, then you might use some data prep tool, and then you might do something in R or Python and then visualize somewhere else and then email it. And it's like every one of these breaks in the chain makes it that much harder to audit or review by someone else. And the best companies at this, like if you look at Airbnb, they've got this knowledge repository with a bunch of peer-reviewed stuff in it, where you do your analysis, you can get it reviewed and then commit it, and then it becomes official business knowledge. Now, we haven't built out that whole workflow in Mode yet, but I can certainly see us getting there eventually. And we make it easier by virtue of combining all of the various steps. A lot of Mode's value is derived from having access to the database and the ability to do analysis and the ability to visualize and distribute all live in the same place. You know, the way that most people experience it today is that you can be, you know, an executive, someone who has no idea how to code, go to some analysis, hit one button and get an updated version with new data. But for analysts, data scientists, people who want to understand whether the thing they've done is right or in, you know, in some of these cases that you're talking about, fair, when we're talking about credit scores, that kind of thing, right? When there are real life consequences on the line, it's going to matter a lot to be able to see exactly how something was created, which is, it is one of the biggest challenges in this industry in general.
So fast forward, call it 15 or 20 years when, say, your two-year-old's in the workplace. Hard to think that far ahead. But just engage me in this thought experiment. It's just become cliched into oblivion, this notion of the citizen data analyst. But what is the role in 15 to 20 years of the traditional data scientists that, look, you know, like you said, didn't exist maybe 10 or 15 years ago? Now it's one of the, you know, one of the hottest professions, a very popular major. Where does that role go when Mode is wildly successful? Is everyone a citizen data analyst, or will there always be some tasks that require a level of introspection of data that will never be appropriate for a citizen data analyst?
I don't love the term citizen data analyst for a variety of reasons, but the big one is that it places an expectation on people
that data analysis should be part of their job. And there are plenty of folks who should get the value of data and data analysis without having to do it. And like I said, I mean, I don't even want data pros to do it. I want them to spend zero time doing analysis and all their time thinking about it, right? And so maybe in the future, the data science role looks like a really great thinker who, you know, mulls over the hardest business problems and then hopefully doesn't have to do that much to execute the analysis. Whereas a salesperson, should they be a citizen analyst? Like, well, they should probably be out doing deals. And we should give them the benefit of whatever data we possibly can, but not in a way where they have to be a citizen analyst. Like, I don't want them to identify as a citizen analyst. My co-founder, Ben, wrote a fantastic post on his Substack, which, shameless plug here, it's benn.substack.com. And if you're on data Twitter, you've already read it, I'm sure. But he is writing a post that I think will be live by the time this podcast is, outlining this modern data experience and what that should be. Not just the modern data stack, but what we should get out of it. And I think one of the principles that I've been talking about a lot with him as he's been writing this post is just that the expectation that people should be doing analysis leads us down these failed paths. I mean, I've made no secret that I think the old BI paradigm is broken, but the notion that everyone should be a little bit of an analyst is what leads us down this broken path. It's what makes us focus on simplified tools for anyone to go get a simple answer. And the result is so frequently that people find something basic, have additional questions, and then just go back to the analyst and data scientist. So I think what we want to do in the future, and I think where things will shake out, is that we'll have really good integration across data stacks and the stuff that salespeople or marketers or whoever is doing. And we're seeing this emerge as a category now. So census is a really good example of this reverse ETL category, where the whole idea is the data warehouse is the modern system of record. That's where the important stuff is going to be. And we're going to determine all our business logic there. We're going to do transformations and everything and clean up our data. And it's going to live in this centralized place. And then we're going to federate that out to all of these other tools where people live. And so salespeople who want to spend their time in Salesforce, which is a term I use loosely, by the way, they want to spend their time selling and therefore would like as few tools as possible, they're going to get that data in Salesforce. I think this is just how the world is going to work. And so what I think, you know, part of Mode's job here is to be the front end for the modern data stack and to deliver some of this experience. And part of it is knowing that we will be empowering people outside of Mode who live in Salesforce and wherever. And there will be certain types of things that will continue to live in Mode and analysis that will get done in Mode. But, you know, for the most part, what we think of today as the citizen data analyst is not going to be doing analysis if we all do things right, if we move in the right direction, which then of course begs the question of like, what do the data pros do, right? The scientists and the whatever names they have 10, 15 years from now. And I think the answer to that probably is specialization, which could come in a couple of flavors. I think you're going to have some tech experts, you know, we're going to have computer vision is an example of a specialty that, or specialization that we're just probably going to continue to have for a while. It's just different from other flavors of data science. We may also have business specialization. So think about ad tech, right? There are certain problems in ad tech, scale problems, but also subject matter problems. Like, you know, I have a number of friends who did advanced degrees in economics who understand bidding really well. Ad tech is a really sensible place for them. So we're going to start to see specializations like that emerge much more.
So I'm going to reiterate your plug for Ben and his Substack. Dude is the data provocateur. And I'm going to specifically plug a post that he published a while back about the trend in no hitters in baseball. I'm just going to leave it there. Go read it. Derek, we sometimes get a little geeky on this show. And I got to go there because I'm thinking back to the data analyses that I've done and, you know, as I've learned SQL and done some of my own work and the work that we do at PeopleRain, And it's often the case that by the time it gets to the front end, call it the mode, a lot of the hard work has been done. The data prep, the whole data architecture, creating my data frames and figuring out, you know, the right structure for the columns and indexing tables. And I'm kind of thinking, you know, if it weren't me sitting in this chair, but if it were Frank Slootman, CEO of Snowflake, you know, he'd pound his hand on the table. I know this guy, he would literally pound a hole in the table here. And he'd say, you know what, you know, all the real core work is done in a Snowflake, or, you know, it's being done in the data platform. And the data front end, that's going to get commoditized. Snowflake's going to be your one place to do all your analysis. What would you say to Frank?
I think there's tremendous competition in every segment up and down the stack. There's no place that feels like, oh, there's one or two players who have really differentiated offerings. A lot of the stuff, I mean, I'm way less worried about this, about our position being commoditized than like a Fivetran, for example, where, you know, the core value there is really that the product is invisible. You know, it's supposed to move data from one place to another. And the differentiation between that and a competitor is how many integrations they have and, like, does it work? Like, does it just do its one job? I'm sure they're cooking up all kinds of other things to add differentiation to the platform. But because it's invisible to the average person who's at the end of this journey, that to me feels like the type of thing that gets commoditized more quickly. For Mode, I think one of the great pieces of advice that I received actually from DJ Patel before I even started Mode, he said to me, he probably doesn't even remember this. He said to me that the most critical thing is to have eyes on the product. And if people see the product and can associate it with something positive, then you're on the way. And we do have that benefit. It's a curse too, because if something breaks upstream from Mode, naive folks will think that it's Mode's fault. And the thing is that, you know, data scientists or analysts share stuff in Mode all the time. Snowflake might crap out, and the person seeing it on the other end could be the CEO of one of our customers, looks at the thing, it's not running properly, and they think, oh, Mode's a piece of garbage, when in reality it was some other product somewhere in the chain. Snowflake sometimes could be anything. So I feel pretty good about our position there. And I think Snowflake, you know, Firebolt looks pretty good. Before Snowflake seemed like BigQuery was great. Before BigQuery seemed like Redshift was great. I don't think anyone's immune. And I love it. I love the competitiveness of the data world in general. There's so much to be excited about. I mean, this is how we end up with huge leaps forward every 10 years. Like, when I was at Facebook, it just took me so long to execute these Hive queries against this big Hadoop cluster. It was so ungodly slow. And even Facebook has invented their own stuff that makes that way faster now. And, you know, we've got, I mean, even just like using something like Snowflake would probably dramatically speed up the work that I was doing and maybe be able to handle the scale too. I don't know. So I think we'll just continue to see, I mean, the notion of commoditization, there's so much competition here that like everything feels commoditized at some point until someone just like totally breaks the paradigm and does something new. It's also hard. I mean, you know, in 2013, when we started Mode, it was decidedly different from Tableau or anything else that was out there at the time. Even Looker is quite similar to the BI tools of yesteryear. They've just done away with cubes and said you can go direct to like a cloud data warehouse. And that was their innovation. But it's not visibly that much. Mode is just for a different audience that people haven't been building for. And so my hope is that we will, even if it becomes commoditized, we'll at least have been first. And it's given us enough of a leg up to be the standout among that market. Kind of in the way that like Fivetran is for their market today. I don't think we'll forget the name Fivetran now that there are a bunch of competitors. And I think the same thing will probably be true of Mode.
Hey, Derek, we're about out of time, but I hate to leave the friendly confines of your office. So I'm going to get in at least one last question. I recall, you know, probably 20 plus years ago using Crystal Reports, and then there was and then it became Business Objects, and Business Objects was acquired by SAP, and a lot of us in the industry said, you know what, we've reached peak BI. And here we are, BI tools proliferate, data science as a field, you know, has taken the world of technology by storm. I think we'd all agree that we're probably in the early innings, you could argue, of BI. When we're having another version of this conversation in, I don't know, call it 10 years, what does BI look like then?
I think it looks a lot like Quora. Quora is one of my favorite products. And I don't spend that much time on Quora, but I just think they've so perfectly executed the thing that they do. And let me tell you what I mean. When I have a question, I type it in plain English. We're talking about Quora, but we might as well be talking about the future of BI here, right? So I type in my question in plain English. Someone's already answered that question. Great. I get directed to the answer. If not, well, Quora tells me who the experts are, right? These are the people you can go to for your answer. In modern BI, it's maybe people, but it might also be, well, here's a stepping stone for you. Here's some analysis that's going to get you pretty close. I think one of the biggest tragedies in business intelligence today is that everything we do gets forgotten. And I mentioned earlier, you know, the term ad hoc and feeling like it was devalued. And this is part of the reason is that a lot of ad hoc work doesn't stick around. It just gets forgotten. But we're going to solve this problem. Mode will solve this problem if nobody else does. I think we will probably be the first people to do it. To really do a good job of taking the work that gets done and making it available for people to reuse in the future. The way they should discover it is by writing questions in plain English. And they should be able to get an older answer to the question that they can update, or something close enough that they can adapt, or at the very least, someone who knows how to get that answer. And when I think about how we drive the time to do analysis down to zero, the easiest way to do that is to just steal. You know, think about how software development works today. It's like you're using open source frameworks that someone else wrote, and you're borrowing the rest from Stack Overflow. And I don't mean that to minimize software development. I think extremely highly of our developers at Mode. And I know that this is a tough skill, and it's not one that I have. So I have a real appreciation for it. But I see how it gets done, and it makes sense. It's just the fastest way to do it. Why bang your head against the wall figuring everything out for yourself? And I think that's really the future of BI, is we are saving ourselves a ton of time. We're getting that time to understand our questions better down to zero by borrowing from ourselves, from our past selves, and building on top of it.
Well, we got to wrap up, but it really does feel like there's at least another few shows just unpacking some of these really important topics. I've really enjoyed this. And, you know, we refer to this show as AI and the future of work. There's something about, you know, this whole arrangement that feels like the future of work. You know, me and Derek sitting here in kind of a makeshift podcast studio and, you know, waxing philosophical about the future of BI. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Derek, thanks so much for having me. And I really just am excited about continuing the conversation, and wish you and Ben and the team best of luck. This is your host, Dan Turchin, signing off for this week, but back next week with another fascinating guest.
Thanks so much for having me, Dan. This is really fun.